Are you sure you want to stay here? It looks creepy.
But Savannah, this is the House of Mystery. Let's see, the brochure says true crime, conspiracy, alternate history, all rooms right here in the house.
I don't know, which room is ours?
Yes, this may be our room. Oh, well, sorry, ma'am. Obviously, this is not our room. Ah, here's our room. True crime.
You have now entered into the House of Mystery, the best in true crime, conspiracy, and alternative history, with Al Warren and Kevin Thompson. KCAA, the stations that leave no listener behind. Broadcasting on 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM. The trifecta of talk radio for Southern California.
I'm your host today, Al Warren. Kev Thompson is off on assignment. So now we're going back to Western days, and you know, we just love doing this. And today we have a great author, and we're going to focus on his book, The Last Outlaws. And that's the lives and legends of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So joining us now is Tom Hatch. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Now, you write a lot of Westerns. Was there a particular reason that Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid became a couple of cowboys you wrote about?
Well, I'll tell you, there was none other like them in the West. They had traits that are admirable, if you can put it that way, for outlaws. Jesse James was a cold-blooded killer. Billy the Kid was a cold-blooded killer. Butch and Sundance were the most successful outlaws in the West, and they did not kill a person until the day they died. That was one of the rules that they had for their gang. Their gang had some of Harvey Logan, Kid Curry, some of the most brutal killers in the West, but they were not allowed to kill anybody during their robberies. And they did not rob passengers on a train, or they did not rob people in a bank, individuals. They robbed the corporations because they thought the corporations were sticking it to the little guy. And so they kind of wanted to get back at them, and they were more like a Robin Hood than anybody else. And the fact is, they were never caught. They were never caught in the United States because they had another trait, and that was they planned their getaway as seriously as they planned the holdup itself. Butch would have horses 2 miles out of town, so if a posse came after him, he'd change horses 2 miles out of town, have a fresh horse. He'd have it 5 miles down the road, he'd have more horses. And so they planned their getaway very carefully. And so they were like gentlemen cowboys in a way. And they didn't like people that were taking advantage of the working man, and they were the working men. Both of them were cowboys, good wranglers with horses, and made their living that way in quite a few years. But they both had larceny in their hearts. So that ended up with a lot of successful bank and train robberies. But they were different from the standpoint that they were not killers.
Right, right. Now they come together. Butch Cassidy, his story, he was from a Mormon family, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. He was from a Mormon family in Utah, Beaver, Utah.
And so what made him leave the Mormon faith, so to speak, and kind of get into robbing the banks?
Well, there were a couple different things that happened. Number one was his father was not a devout Mormon. His father had was involved in a land dispute with a neighbor, and in those days in Utah, the bishops were the ones who decided right from wrong and were basically the justice of the peace and the judges. And so a bishop ruled against his father on a land dispute with a neighbor, and this turned the father against the Mormon religion. And so Butch kind of went with him. The mother stayed in the religion. She schooled the kids. Butch was schooled in the Bible, in the Book of Mormon, and as a kid. But that kind of turned him away. Then he was a big kid, and so he was hired out to work at a neighboring ranch. And he went into town one day. He needed a pair of coveralls, overalls, jeans, and went into the store, and the store was closed. So he jimmied the door open, went in, and got himself a pair of jeans and a piece of apple pie. Of course, being a growing kid, he needed apple pie. And he left a note for the owner of the store saying, next time I come into town, I'll pay you for this. Well, he gets back to the ranch, and the next day the sheriff shows up and arrests him. And he's taken into jail because he stole these jeans and this piece of apple pie. And even though it was all settled, he still had a very bad taste in his mouth. But he basically got involved with a guy named Mike Cassidy. His name was Robert Leroy Parker, by the way, Butch Cassidy's real name. And he got involved with a guy named Mike Cassidy, who was a cowboy on that ranch where he worked. And Mike Cassidy was a common criminal. And he took Butch under his wing, and Butch wanted to be like him. And when Butch had to leave the county because he got in some problems with that, it was rumored he was rustling and other things. And he took the name Cassidy in honor of his friend Mike Cassidy. But it's basically, there wasn't a whole lot that set him off. And he was a happy-go-lucky kid. He was the oldest of 12 brothers and sisters. And he was just a big kid who had fun with them. He'd organize grasshopper races and all kinds of things. He was a very gregarious man and likable. Everywhere he went, he was liked. But he, again, had this this trait, this larceny in his heart. So that's basically how he got involved in crime.
Why did he call himself Butch? Like Cassidy after the guy that kind of brought him along in the business, so to speak. But where did Butch come from?
Yeah, I know. That's one of those that will never be proven. He did work for a butcher briefly in Rock Springs, Wyoming. And some say it came from that. Mike Warner, who was another criminal that rode with Butch, wrote a book and said, no, just started calling him Butch. Okay, so really, really don't know. I mean, the problem we have in putting together the lives of outlaws is they didn't leave a whole lot of, you know, information, diaries, whatever, and they used aliases a lot. So that was just one thing that disappeared from the pages of history.
Yeah, yeah. And so how did he meet up with the Sundance Kid? And who was the Sundance Kid?
Well, the Sundance Kid, he was an interesting character. His name was Harry Alonzo Lungabaugh. He grew up just north of Philadelphia. His uncle had a canal boat, and he worked on the canals as a kid. They would work long, long hours going up and down the canals carrying goods, then they'd have to take care of the mules later on. And Harry was an interesting kid because he liked to read. He was a wild kid, but he liked to read. He actually spent $1 on a library card back then, which was a lot of money at the time when he was 14 years old. And he would take out these books on Jesse James and Billy the Kid and Wild Bill Hickok and loved to read about all of those guys, Wyatt Earp. And little did he know that someday he would join them. His favorite book was an Australian book called Robbery Under Arms, a tale of a lovable villain who had high moral standards of loyalty and honor and was innocently led into a criminal life. And that basically summed up Sundance's life. He was a cowboy. He went out to Cortez, Colorado to live with his uncle at age 14. And he might have run into Butch at that time. Butch was in the neighborhood, but we don't know that for sure. But he learned how to wrangle horses and work cattle, and so he wanted to see the West and be a cowboy. He took off. He went up to Wyoming and worked as a cowboy and a horse wrangler. Became very well respected with his ability of handling livestock. And unfortunately, what happened was in 1886 to 1887, the winter came, and it was the greatest blizzard in the history of this country. An estimated 90% of rain stock in Wyoming and Montana died during that blizzard. And there were giant cattle ranches. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds, millions of thousands and thousands of cattle who died, and horses. And also ranches were buried. And this is where Charlie Russell, the famous artist, of course, Sundance, as Harry Lungabaugh, shared a bunkhouse with Charlie Russell at one point, as a matter of fact, up in Montana. This was the point where Charlie Russell drew his famous picture, Last of the 5,000, that started out his career as an artist, where it was a starving cow with coyotes standing nearby waiting for it to die to kill it and eat it. And so 90% of the stock was gone, so 90% of the cowboys were not needed. And Harry was one of those. So he started drifting, looking for a grub state, looking for a job anywhere. Went to Deadwood, South Dakota, which was a party town, and couldn't find anything there. He kept drifting. He went to a ranch, got to this ranch, and found an abandoned, he thought, horse and saddle and six gun, and he stole it, took it, and he was going to go sell it. Well, they caught him. That was near Sundance, Wyoming. They caught him, and he went to prison. There was an interesting aspect where when the sheriff did catch him, supposedly Sundance jumped from a moving train that he claims was going 100 miles an hour to get away. But they recaptured him. He went to prison for 18 months for horse stealing, just like Butch had gone to prison for 18 months for horse stealing. Butch stole a $5 horse. But then they called him Sundance when he got out of there. It was funny when they captured him. They put in the paper, oh, we've captured one of the most vicious outlaws in the West who makes Jesse James look like a school marm. He's just so bad. And Harry Lungabaugh took umbrage with this newspaper article, so he wrote a letter to the editor from jail saying, look, I'm just a hungry cowboy that was wandering through. And I said, not Jesse James. I didn't do any of this. But eventually he got out of prison, and all of these outlaws gravitated to certain places in the West. Hell's Back Acre, you might call it. And they ended up at a place of the Bassett Ranch in Browns Park, Colorado. And they believe that that's where Butch and Sundance met, that one Thanksgiving where the outlaws served as waiters, and everybody in the whole neighborhood came. It's a place where lawmen didn't show up because it was easy to get away. It was near other states, near Utah, near Wyoming, so you could escape. So the lawmen didn't show up. It was said that Tom Horn came through there once looking for bad guys, and Butch ran him off. So I don't know. That's just a rumor. That's why my book was called The Lives and Legends, because you don't know if a lot of it's true. But they supposedly met at that time, They both loved to read. The Bassetts had a library there on the ranch. The Bassetts, by the way, were an interesting family. One of the ladies was in love with Butch, and he had an affair with her on and off over the years, supposedly, never married her. And there were two sisters. The younger one was wild over him, but she was a little young. And the Bassetts would buy things that showed up, whether it was a gun or a saddle or a cow or a horse, no questions asked. So they were kind of fences for the outlaws in the area. They ran a ranch. And the daughters were as tough as any outlaw, the Bassett girls. And that's where Butch and Sundance met. They both found they had a lot in common. They liked to read, for example, and they liked to drink, and they liked the girls. And they had larceny in their heart. And so Butch made a perfect balance for Butch because, or I'm sure Sundance made a perfect balance for Butch because Butch was a happy-go-lucky kind of guy, a thinker. And Sundance was a little moody at times and had an edge to him. And Butch knew he could bounce ideas off of Sundance, and Sundance could add to the equation. As I say, Butch was probably the finest planner of bank robberies and train robberies the West or any other time has ever seen. He didn't just bust in there and start shooting. He had it all planned out. He knew exactly when and where and how. And so they got together, and because of the Bassett Ranch and all the people that went through, they had a revolving gang that ended up being called the Wild Bunch that had some of the toughest and meanest and most vicious outlaws in the West, but they all obeyed Butch and Sundance, and they didn't shoot anyone. And one of my favorites was Harvey Logan. He was a cold-blooded killer. Bruce Dern played him in a movie, and it was perfect because Bruce Dern, we all know, is evil because he shot John Wayne. But Harvey Logan was in the bunkhouse up there with Charlie Russell and Sundance, for example, up north. And a lot of them were, as I say, that blizzard of 86, 87 put them all out of business as cowboys. And Butch had a good business going until he found he could make some money elsewhere. Now, I will add an asterisk on that, where I have earned my spurs as a cowboy. I work days. I'll get a call from a neighboring rancher saying, hey, how'd you like to get out of your office for a day? And I'll go and I'll work cattle, whether it's doctoring or branding or mending fence or breaking water on stock tanks. But so I put in long days as a cowboy, and so I know how Butch and Sundance felt, that when you're a cowboy, you're sitting there thinking, man, there's got to be an easier way. And you're thinking about, yeah, I could go rob that bank. I'd go rob that stagecoach. And so I understand where their mindset was and a lot of these cowboys that were set loose. So Butch and Sundance, they planned these robberies, and they pulled them off and got away with the loot, lots of loot.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why is it that they were the leaders, kind of? Like, didn't anybody challenge them, or was it they were just too good with guns, or what was it that about them that kept them kind of the head of the pack?
Well, I think it's because they proved themselves that they could pull off a robbery. There were times when other members of the Wild Bunch went off on their own and tried to pull off a robbery and couldn't. They ran into problems, and they had to start shooting and get themselves out of there. There was one up in Malta, Montana once, where it was 16 degrees below zero, and they stopped this train, and they thought there was a big payroll on it, and they didn't realize that, oh, today's Monday and the banks were closed on Sunday, so there was no payroll. Well, Butch wouldn't have made that mistake. So they knew that they would get a cut, they would get a share. They trusted Butch and Sundance, and it was they would go their own way, and then others would show up, and then others would come back, and they would all take orders from Butch and Sundance. I think Sundance kind of kind of protected Butch that way also. He, as I say, he had an edge to him. He was eating breakfast cereal one day, and a guy, one of the guys in the bunkhouse laughed at him. Oh, you're eating that sissy food and everything. He pulled out his pistol and put it in the guy's nose, and the guy said, yeah, I eat that all the time myself. It's really good stuff. So Butch was kind of, Sundance was kind of the enforcer of the bear.
Was he like a really good shot? But you're saying they never killed anybody in the robberies. Had they killed people outside of robberies?
They never killed anybody until they shot it out with the Bolivian army the day they died. So you can basically say they didn't kill anybody until the day they died.
Wow. That's quite a feat in itself.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and to be in that kind of business where you're robbing banks and trains and everything else to never actually kill anybody, that's, I don't know, pretty good.
Well, that's why I say that's what made them different. They weren't cold-blooded, vicious killers. They were more frustrating to the authorities because they were so good. Others weren't that good. I mean, look at the James Younger people up in the Northfield, Minnesota raid. They got blown to pieces. And all of these people ran into a bad situation at one point or another, and their robbery turned bad. Butch almost ran into a problem at one point, but Castle Gate, Utah, he's there, and they were going to steal the mining payroll. So they were hanging around town for a week, which was kind of odd because the whole town was miners, and here's a few cowboys hanging around town. And the train came in with the payroll, and all the miners were assembled there in the around the office waiting for the paymaster to go to the train and come back and pay them. He went to the train, he came back, and Butch stuck a gun in his ribs and said, "Give me the payroll." And all these people were there, and his partner had his horse, and his horse bolted and ran. And Butch is standing there with hundreds of angry miners around him. He said, "Just keep calm. Everything's going to be okay. Just keep calm." And fortunately, his partner got the horse under control, came back, and Butch mounted, and off they went and stole the mining payroll there at Castle Gate. About 7,000 in gold and 1,000 in cash and 860 in silver. And they ended up, here's the bad thing about being a robber like that is the silver got so heavy that they ended up dropping it by the side of the road and just took the gold and the cash. It was just too heavy for the horses and everything to carry. So
too much.
So some honest person, I'm sure, came along and found that silver on the side of the road.
Yeah. Now, how long did they get away with this kind of robberies and this kind of lifestyle, and why is it the police or the sheriffs never caught them?
Well, as I say, the last question first, the sheriff never caught them, the posses never caught them because they planned so well. Butch was perfect on his planning, and he made sure nothing went wrong. And the problem you have, they went on, for the decade of the 1890s, they went on successfully. But what you have is a problem that what happened was they ran into the 20th century, and suddenly they weren't running from local posses anymore. They were running from a sophisticated system, and that system had the ability to send pictures around real quick, and there was fenced-in range, telephone lines, electric lights, and these new crime-fighting techniques put a stop to them. And they realized that they were going to be caught at some point if they kept this up, because the posses couldn't catch them, but the telegraph wire could and the telephone could, where they could cut the lines, and they did cut the lines in many cases, but there was just too much going on now, and they were getting too well known. What happened is they went to San Antonio, and five of them sat for a photograph. And it was such a cool photograph that the photographer put it in his window. And it just so happened that a Pinkerton man walked by and said, gee, a couple of those guys look familiar. They had, up to that point, they didn't know what Butch looked like or Sundance. But a couple of them in there, there was Ben the Tall Texan Kilpatrick in there, and Harvey Logan was in there, and so he recognized those guys, and William News Carver was in the picture also. He called himself News because he loved seeing his name in the newspaper. But so then they said, well, that's got to be Butch, and that's got to be Sundance. So suddenly the Pinkertons had their photos and could send them around everywhere in the country. So things started getting a little hot for them. And they were not stupid guys, as previously noted. They said, we've got to get out of here. We've got to go somewhere. And so that's when they decided that they just might leave the country.
Wow. And that's when they decided on Bolivia.
Yeah. They thought about Mexico. They thought about Canada. Sundance had owned a bar in Canada briefly with a guy that he ended up slugging the guy and taking the money out of the till and leaving because the guy was cheating him, and so he got fed up with being a businessman. And they knew Canada, the Mounties, were pretty good. They would perhaps catch them. So the rumor is, and as I say, you know, it's tough to sometimes pin down reasons, but rumor has it they were reading the National Geographic magazine and saw a picture spread and a narrative about Patagonia in South America, and said, wow, that's like the Old West all over again. We can go back to our roots. All right, let's do that. So they did a couple of train robberies and a bank robbery in Winnemucca, Nevada, and stocked up on some money, and they decided they would go to Patagonia. And so by that time, Sundance had a girlfriend who was called Etta Place. In the movie with Paul Newman and Robert Redford, she was allegedly a school teacher. Nobody really knows who she was. And the rumors have gone that she was a working girl from a brothel down in San Antonio, or she was a ranch girl from Texas. Supposedly they'd met her down in Texas, and she started traveling with Sundance, and they eventually did get married, supposedly. He wrote to his sister and told her that, and stopped in and introduced her to his sister in Pennsylvania at one point. And nobody knows, other than the fact that Pinkertons wrote that she could ride and shoot and spit as well as any man. So she certainly was probably ranch-raised, no matter what she had become after that. So the three of them, Butch, Sundance, and Etta, went to New York City and had a big old time in New York City for a while. Sundance went to Tiffany's and bought himself a watch, bought a brooch for Etta. That watch that he bought at Tiffany's had a number on it, and that was one of the ways they identified who had died in Bolivia years later, when they shot it out with the Bolivian police that in the person's possession was this watch that Harry Longabaugh had bought at Tiffany's. And so they took the ship to Brazil and then on to Argentina and decided to become honest, which for people with larceny in their heart, that didn't last too long, but it lasted long enough for them to build up a wonderful ranch and down in Patagonia, not far from Chile. and they had markets in Chile and around there for cattle and horses, and they gathered around them quite a bit of stock. It's kind of funny when they went down there because the vaqueros laughed at them. Oh, look at these Anglos. They don't know what they're doing or anything, and suddenly Butch and Sundance start roping and shooting, and these guys are in total awe of them, that these were super cowboys. And so they immediately had great respect down there in Patagonia. So that's how they drew them to Bolivia then.
If they were doing well with the ranch and kind of going, you know, straight, legit, what made them, get away from that?
Well, there were a couple of things, and you like to attribute the first one to them just being, they looked out for easy money, and you know, they were kind of primitive in their banks back then. But what had happened is the Pinkertons caught wind that they might have left the country, so they were sending pictures of them around, and one of them got down into their area, and the sheriff came to let them know that, hey, they're looking for you, and we aren't going to do anything to you, but the Pinkertons are looking for you. And the Pinkertons didn't want to come to South America to arrest them. They hadn't killed anybody, so that's one thing. They weren't wanted for murder, even though there was a few they were attributed to that were proved otherwise later on. But the sheriff, told them that the Pinkertons were on their trail. Well, the Pinkertons were using them back in the States as a fundraising tool. They were saying, yeah, we want to go after them, but we got to raise money. Please donate money to us so we can go after Butch and Sundance. Well, the railroads and the banks didn't really care any longer. If Butch and Sundance weren't there to rob their places, then they weren't giving money to anybody for it. So the Pinkertons never did come after them in South America, but they felt that they were on the trail, and there was that kind of thing, well, what do you want to do? Okay, well, so they knocked off a couple banks in the area, and stagecoaches, and again, they didn't steal from the people themselves, and they stole in Argentina there, and in 1905, ETA disappeared, and right after a robbery of 90,000 in pesos at Via Mercedes, Argentina, there's been a lot of speculation on what happened to ETA. I am the first one to put forth this idea, thank you very much. lots of them say that ETA had, appendicitis and had to go back to the States, or Sundance didn't want to start a family, so she went back to the States, or she had this other problem, gallbladder, and went back to the States. They had gone back a couple of times while they lived in Bolivia and traveled around, but she went back. They said she went back alone. She had left Sundance. That's the best they could come up with. I came up with something that's a little more solid. They had this robbery at Via Mercedes Bank, and there were three of them that robbed this bank: Butch, Sundance, and an unknown person on a horse. The posse chased them, and the posse swears that they shot one of them that was riding on the horse, and that person slumped in the saddle, and one of the other riders came by to steady that person in the saddle as they escaped, and they did escape. And I contend that that person was ETA that was shot. And to be, a romantic novelist at heart like I am, I can see Sundance and Butch. She died in Sundance's arms, buried in an unmarked grave in Argentina. And Butch and Sundance couldn't tell anybody about it, or they'd be admitting to the robbery.
Right.
But that third person, and they were not known to have anybody else with them whatsoever on any of those robberies in, in South America. It was just the two of them, and then, of course, the three of them. And that was when, exactly the same timing as when Etta allegedly went back to the States. They didn't find her name on any passage. See, Etta can't be traced. That's the interesting thing. Etta Place is not a real name. Etta was probably her name. Place was Harry Longabaugh's mother's maiden name, and he would use an alias of Harry Place quite often. And so he gave her that alias, obviously, of Etta Place. So others have said, oh, yes, there was a Place family in Iowa that had a girl that ran off. No, sorry. It yeah. couldn't have been that. So, you know, but I believe that that's how Etta ended her time with Sundance and Butch, is that she didn't go back to the States. She didn't leave Sundance except in death. She died in his arms. They buried her in an unmarked grave. Yeah. But that's my theory. No one ever came up with that theory before I did, and I guess they didn't study that that bank robbery in via Mercedes to try and speculate who might have been with them. So
yeah.
they did invite others down, but none of them would come. None of Harvey Logan was even invited, the murderous guy who he had warrants for 15 murders, but he probably killed 2 to 3 times more than that, including a number of peace officers. He was one bad dude. Very bad. How Butch controlled him, I don't know, but just the threat of having him there would stop anybody from causing trouble, yeah. knowing who he was. So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to that one, because I think it's plausible, and that's what happened to Etta.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, you know. So, now, there's a lot of talk about if they did actually get shot up in Bolivia, and people have written books and talked about that the bodies were not really Butch and Sundance, and they had come back to the States, and I think the sister also said that she had seen him. And what's your take on that?
Well, I personally think that they died there, and the reason for that is because of what they found with the bodies. And it wasn't a massive shooting like they showed in the movie, where the whole Bolivian army surrounded this little hacienda. What it was is they heard these two guys were in there, and there was a mule. They had pulled off a robbery on a mountainside called Dead Cow Hill. I won't pronounce it in Spanish, but it was Dead Cow Hill in Bolivia. They got away with $90,000. The payroll mules were 2 days out from Tapiza on a 3-day ride to the mines. And they got 90 grand off of that, and there was a mule driver and a boy along with him, and it was out in the middle of nowhere, and they could have killed the two people, and no one would have ever known that they had been the ones to pull off the robbery. Instead, they let them go, because they did not kill people. They let them go and stole a mule to take the money. And the mule driver ran into the nearby town and yelled, "Hey, they stole the payroll!" And so the whole area was looking for them. They was just swarmed, the army and the miners and vigilantes. They just town citizens formed groups to catch them. They checked into this hacienda in San Vicente, Bolivia, November 6, 1908, and they had the mule with them. And the person that rented them the hacienda recognized the mule as having army insignias on it. So he went to the local barracks, where there were only just a few soldiers and a sergeant, and the captain was out drinking. They couldn't find him, and he told the sergeant about it. So the sergeant took a couple of his men, and they went to this hacienda. As soon as Butch saw him, he shot him dead. First person that he or Butch had shot in their lifetime. So what had happened is all of these citizens started coming, and whatever soldiers were left around the barracks, they started coming, and they were shooting and shooting and shooting and blowing this hacienda to pieces. And the problem that you have on it is that it looks like it was a murder-suicide. It looks like Butch put his... that Sundance was shot up a bit, and Butch put his pistol to Sundance's forehead and shot him, and then put it on himself. He was not going to be taken alive. They knew they would be put in jail for forever, for prison, and he'd done that, and he wasn't going to do it again. Okay, so they buried them there in the graveyard at San Vicente. They... at one point, sent over famed forensic scientist Clyde Snow. He worked on the bones of Little Bighorn and some other things. He was pretty well known. So they exhumed bodies that they thought might be Butch and Sundance, and ended up with one set of the bones was an Indian girl once they got back to the States, and another was a miner who had blown himself up with some dynamite. So they knew who these people were. Now, as far as Lula, Butch's sister, she was writing a book. So she had him dying in Mormon ancestry records. She had him dying in November 6, 1908. Oddly enough, the same day he was shot and killed there in San Vicente. And she changed it. She petitioned the Mormon Ancestry Record to change that to accommodate her, because she had this big story that Butch came back in the 1930s and went out in the fields and said hey to a few people, and, oh, yeah, that had to be Butch, and, oh, yeah, I knew him as a kid, and that had, you know, all of this. And so that's very suspect that he came back, and the sister... who wrote this book, and some of her book is okay, you know, when she recounted their youth and things like that about the parents, and that, you know, that's pretty factual, but she went off board here and had to change those records, so we know that's kind of bogus. Then there's always been people, imposters, people who billed themselves as Sundance Jr. and others. It was funny, a couple years, while I was writing the book, these people I know, I won't mention their names because it's kind of an embarrassment to them, came out, oh, we bought this autobiography. We know who Butch was. He came back to the States, and he's really William T. Phillips, this guy from, I think he was up in Washington. Gee, that's odd. But he wrote this biography. Well, it just so happens that... that this guy was a cellmate of Butch at one point and knew some things about Butch. And so he wrote this bogus book about my life, Butch Cassidy. And it's readily available online, and it's kind of a funny read because he'll use crazy terms in it that Butch never would have used or known about even. So some modern terms. But... so there's been many imposters, but as you know, with all Old West outlaws, we don't allow them to stay buried. We dig them up in legend all the time. But I personally believe that they did die over there. They went through their belongings, and Butch's belongings pointed to him, and Sundance, as I mentioned, there was a watch from Tiffany's. So, you know... nobody's proved any different, and they haven't dug up the whole graveyard. And there's people that do make pilgrimages there to take a look at it. It's up in the middle of nowhere, and the locals are not too happy about having people show up. But so there may be more graves. Who knows? but I think they met their demise over there at the hands of the army and the citizens of the city. And they could have gotten away to live another day, rob more banks, more payrolls, if they'd have shot those two people out in the mountains, out in the middle of nowhere, where their bodies wouldn't have even been. They could have hid their bodies out there, and they would have never been found. They would have never known what happened to them. So, but they did not. Yeah. So all we know is that both of them together have one murder attributed to them, and that's when Butch shot the sergeant that showed up at his door and surprised him.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about Western, like cowboys and outlaws, like Billy the Kid and Wyatt Earp and Butch Cassidy and Sundance and all that stuff? Why are the outlaws so famous, like so popular? Why do we hold them so dear?
Well, I don't know. People are still fascinated with all of the modern day serial killers as well, the Ted Bundys of the world, and you know, and all of them. That, you know, Charles Manson has a book written about him every year, at least one new book. And the same with Billy the Kid and Jesse James. I mean, what's new? What have they done lately? Nothing. But they continue, these idiot authors like me, you know, come up with stuff and say, I need to have a book published, so let me see. Billy the Kid, what did he do? Okay, I think he went over, you know. Yeah. And so you try and tie him into something, and because the public just seems to be fascinated with serial killers. Look at Bonnie and Clyde. Look at Dillinger. Look at Al Capone. That series of people there. Then you go into the Bill Doolins and the Reno brothers. And, you know, there's so many of them over the years that, you know, people are captivated by stories of these people, I guess, that had the guts to pull the trigger. I don't know. Yeah, they're cold-blooded murderers. As I say, Jesse James, he even shot a girl on a train once when she stuck her head out the window. I mean, they would go in and rob the passengers, and beware if you tried to keep that gold watch or whatever you had. Butch and Sundance did not touch the passengers whatsoever, and they were safe, and they didn't want to hurt anyone. They did have those two episodes with the guy on the train named Woodcock, who didn't want to give up the express car door. He didn't want to open the express car door, and they blew him up with dynamite, but he lived through that one. And then the next train that they robbed, he was on that one too, but he opened the door this time. So
that movie was pretty close to the true story.
In a lot of ways, it was. They were happy-go-lucky kind of cowboys, you know, and that's why they kind of showed them wisecracking, and, you know, they were like that. They liked, you know, drinking and gambling and running around. Sundance was a little more aloof, quick-tempered, had a lightning draw, and Butch was shrewd. And Butch was basically just a natural-born leader. I mean, you ask how he could keep these people in line. Well, he was a tough guy, too. I don't think they wanted to mess with him. But Butch once got shot right in the head by a sheriff, but it was a short round. It was a misfire, and the bullet bounced off his skull.
Wow.
That was in his younger days.
Lucky.
Butch was off, was a jockey. He was a horse jockey. They had a horse in southwestern Colorado, not far from Cortez, where Sundance's uncle had the horse ranch. They had a horse out there named Betty, and Betty could beat anything. And so they ran against everybody until no one would run. They took it all around the West, and with Butch as the jockey, and won every race. And that's where Butch saw his first person killed, and that maybe turned him off from killing, where they had beaten some Indians, some Native Americans, some Ute Indians, and they, part of when you win a race, you get the other person's horse as well. As they took the horse of this Indian, and this Indian came wanting his horse, and one of the guys that Butch was with shot him dead. And they, you know, and Butch was kind of appalled at that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what happened to turn him off to killing. And, of course, Sundance, his grandfather started a Baptist church there, and Sundance sat in the pews every Sunday. He was very religious as a kid as well, and and thought himself to be moral and ethical in his own way, as he saw it. He could justify it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, did they stay close with their families during the times in the States when they were doing all the robberies, or were they completely distant from them?
Well, that's the sad part. Bush left and he never came home again. He went to Telluride, Colorado, which was a boom town, and ended up robbing the bank there. That was his first successful bank robbery where he had planned the getaway. He had been working in the mines where he'd been taking ore up and down a hill, and that was a tough job. But he got $20,000 in cash, and that started him on his road to crime, and it got back to his father about that he'd maybe been involved, and his father came to see him in Telluride. His brother also came to Telluride for some quick money, and his brother was killed in a horse riding accident, which affected Butch. But the father came and tried to convince him to come home, and Butch said, "No, I'm a branded man. I'll just bring shame on our family. The Mormons hate us already, and we've got to live with the Mormons, and so maybe I'll come home someday." Word has it that he did go near there once and went home, but didn't go home. He was on a hill overlooking his old home and watched as his brothers and sisters were still there playing. But it was funny because I guess one of his sisters was quite attractive, and Charlie Seringo, who was a Pinkerton man, wrote a book himself about trying to chase down Butch Cassidy, and he went back to Butch's hometown to look for him and had met Butch's sister and fell in love with her. That would have been something.
Yeah.
He said, I had to get out of there. He said, I had to get out of there because I was falling in love with this girl. But Butch had heard that. I think he might have killed somebody. But and not his sister either.
No, so, yeah. It would have been the dime.
But they, you know, again, Sundance wrote to his sister. They owned a business. One sister owned a sewing business, very successful, and she changed her name because she didn't want to be tied. When he became famous, they knew he was Longabaugh, and she didn't want to be known as Longabaugh. The other sister had married, and her name was different, and they owned a small business. They did wrought iron and things like that, and she would get letters from Sundance, and she would make notations in the company books that Sundance had written to her. And they even came and brought Etta at one point on one of their trips from Bolivia. He came and introduced her to the family and said he was in town to have, he was going up to Buffalo because he had an old gunshot wound that he needed taken care of. Whether that was true or not, don't know. That's what she said. Well, the Pinkertons found out that he'd been writing to her, and they bribed the local postal clerk to stop the letters from Sundance so that they could find out where they were postmarked and where he was. But they didn't have much success doing that either. And then the letters stopped November 6th, 1908,
well,
when they were killed in Bolivia.
Kind of says it all.
That's kind of another, yeah. That's kind of another sign right there that they were killed in Bolivia.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it, you know.
Well, yeah.
Well, this has been great. What a great conversation. We really appreciate you coming by. The book, The Last Outlaws, and it's The Lives and Legends of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and our author has been. The author's Tom Hatch, and he's been our guest too. Thanks for being on the show.
You're quite welcome. I enjoyed it.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.